3, hit it.
Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is relationship freedom, which is really about the freedom to be yourself inside your most important relationships. And the numbers to call to get coaching on relationships, having what you want, and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. And as always, I like to sort of set the table and talk a little bit about our topic for today. And I think the place that I want to start is to just look at, why would you ever not be yourself inside your most important relationships? Now, I think most people listening, certainly most people I talk to, both personally and as a coach, have had at some point some degree of, boy, if they knew what I really think, if they really knew me, you know, if I let myself be myself around this person, you know, they wouldn't want to be with me. And you also may know some people, or you might be some people, who has the opposite experience, who one of the things you love about your best friend, your romantic partner, sometimes it's the same person, is that you can totally be yourself around them, that you don't have to censor yourself around them. You don't have to pretend to be a certain way or pretend not to be a certain way when you're with them. Now, there's a distinction, for me at least, between the freedom to be yourself and, I don't know, farting your way through breakfast. I'm just trying to choose something. You know, I think, you know, that there's a, you know, you may still choose within your relationship to have a certain degree of manners that you both kind of agree, you know what, we're just gonna do things this way. You know, you may choose, still with an absolute freedom to express yourself, you may choose to express yourself with less swearing if your partner doesn't like swearing or something like that. So it's not about, hey man, I need to be free to like be myself. It's just recognizing, where am I centering myself within my relationship? Where am I not saying what I want to say? Where am I not doing what I want to do? Where am I not showing up how I'd like to show up? And why? And if you look at why, one of the things that I've noticed is invariably it's because we either approve of part of ourselves and don't approve of another part of ourselves. So we only want to show, you know, the approved part of ourselves. We don't want to show our shadow, at least not until after they've married us, right? Or because we kind of just are afraid that if they knew how we really were, they wouldn't love us. Now, there's a really interesting dilemma that comes up when you try to present a certain aspect of yourself to your partner, to the people that you're with, in order to be liked or loved, which is that even if they love you, you'll never be able to really feel the love, because you'll go, well, they don't really love me. They love the facade. And it's almost, so it's one of these weird things where it's almost worse if it works. Because if it works, then you're stuck. It's like, crap, now they love this facade. Now I have to maintain this mask. I have to maintain this facade. And because if they, you know, that's who they married. That's who they fell in love with. That's who they like to hang out with. And sometimes people, you know, will maintain that for much of their life. And then the real them will go off and have an affair with somebody who can accept them as they are. And the funny thing is, the person they were with might have been willing to accept them as well, but never had a chance to find out. There's a beautiful story that Greg Bear tells. He's the author of the Real Love series of books, and I highly recommend reading them, particularly Real Love and Real Love and Marriage were both books that I really enjoyed. And what they have in common is this understanding that in order to be truly loved, you have to be truly seen. And in order to be truly seen, you have to allow yourself to be truly seen. And in the second half of the show, I'm going to share with you a story from Greg's books about a king who had some warts and what that all has to do with our topic for today. So we're going to take your calls throughout the show. And numbers to call, 866-254-1579. It's toll-free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., dial usually 001-760-918-4300. And we're going to begin in North Carolina with Gigi. Hey, Gigi, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Thank you. Well, kind of interesting. I was in a relationship with a guy for a couple years, and it was always kind of a come here, go away thing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like he would miss me, and say, come here. And then as soon as I got there, he would be like, you know, he would get distant and everything. And so this went on for a little while. We would get together and break up. And then one day, one of my friends gave me this book, and it was called The Wizard of Oz and Other Narcissists. And yeah. I realized...
Don't know the book, but I like the title.
After reading it, it's basically about having relationships with the narcissist. And then one of his friends said, yes, I think he has been diagnosed as a narcissist. Well, what I didn't realize about this relationship is it does draw you in and you kind of get into this vortex of them making you feel really good about yourself and then really bad about yourself. So I have ended the relationship, but it's amazing how even though I know he's not the right guy, my self-esteem just kind of plummeted, and I still have this urge to, like, call him and stuff, and I'm really trying hard to stay out of that because I could not be myself. Every time I was real, that's whenever he would say, gotta go.
So it's really difficult for a personality to have a lasting relationship with another personality.
Mm.
You know, at the level of personality, look, everyone has a personality, and all personalities are neurotic. That's like psychology 101.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the sort of traditional psychotherapeutic model is we should try to fix that. We should try to make our personalities less neurotic. The more sort of spiritual point of view is, why bother?
Right,
because we can live from essence more and more of the time. And when we're living from essence, not only does our personality not matter as much, but it won't get in the way as much. When we're not caught up in that, you know, Gigi with her history and Michael with his history and Bob the narcissist with his history.
Right.
And so you can relate well with anyone at the level where you're the same. So in other words, there's a beautiful definition I share on the show, probably too often, but it's of the word namaste, where it's, I honor the place in you in which the entire universe resides. I honor the place in you of truth, of love, of light, and of peace. And when you are in that place in you, and I am in that place in me, there's only one of us. When we're in that place in ourselves, in that namaste place, we can be in relation with anyone, and we will feel connected to them because we're not putting up anything between us. And they may let us in, they may not let us in, depending on what they've got up. But it's actually quite easy to relate. When we're trying to make our personality fit with somebody else's so that they meet our ego needs and we meet their ego needs, and, you know, there's an old expression, we seek the teeth that made the wounds.
Mm.
You know, so we're looking for, you know, somebody who can hurt us just the way we're used to being hurt because it's comfortable. And we're looking for somebody who'll let us hurt them just the way we're used to hurting people because that's what we're used to. You can absolutely, people do have relationships like that. Sometimes they even last, but it really is the hard way. It really is a struggle, and it's a constant maintenance exercise where I have to walk around and always make sure, am I doing the right thing, saying the right things so that your ego right. doesn't get rocked? And are you doing the, and I'm always judging you, are you doing the, do you love me enough to do the right things and say the right things so my ego doesn't get rocked?
Right. So when you're ending this and you still have that habit or desire to, you know, be in this relationship with this person, not all the time, but sometimes, you know, to break that habit whenever you see this person often because you're in the same circles.
Have you ever looked at a picture and wanted to draw a mustache on it?
Not recently.
No, but you have, right? You know what I mean.
Okay, right.
Right? And like, you've learned to not act on that impulse.
Yeah.
And it's not like a massive effort. It's not like you have to go, mustn't draw a mustache, mustn't draw a mustache. Oh, God, I drew the mustache again. I'm such a loser. Right? You know, you just kind of know, you know what? I don't need to do that. There's nothing wrong with having that old habitual thought. It's just, you know, it will, the less you act on it, the less often you'll have it.
That makes sense, because this, I think, is more, I mean, honestly, we had really above and beyond everything else, the sex was just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the habit.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, sex is a great drug. You know, we have so much great dopamine and serotonin and oxytocin and all these great chemicals that we get high on legally when we get laid. It's awesome. But... Mm-hmm. You know, as a basis for a long-term relationship, drug addiction's not like number one on my list. You know, what was it that first attracted you to your husband? Well, man, he gave me heroin. It was awesome. You know, you kind of know that marriage isn't probably built on a rock.
Right. That's perfect. Yes. So the next time I see him, I'll just think of him as a picture I want to draw a mustache on.
There you go. And hey, you know
say,
what?
I don't have to do that anymore.
You know, if he's
that.
Enough of a narcissist and it's a nice enough mustache, he might appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. I got to stay right. away from that drawing. All right,
thank you,
thank
Gigi.
You.
Bye. You know, it's funny, but, you know, we have all these interesting reasons for being in relationship. You know, we think, oh, I'm in a relationship to grow, or I am in a relationship to work on myself, or I'm in a relationship for sex, or I'm in a relationship to feel worthwhile, or I'm in a relationship to feel self-esteem, or I'm in a relationship to prove something to somebody. And the problem with all of those reasons for being in a relationship is that they won't sustain over time. Because if that ego need gets met, then you won't need to be with them anymore. And then you'll drift apart, but then you'll start feeling the need again. And then you'll either go back with them or somebody else for the same reason. Or the need won't get met, but you'll keep trying to meet that need. And I'm using the word need. I would be using air quotes if I wasn't on the radio. There's not much point, but you know, I'll just keep looking for that somewhere else. And if I can't get it here anymore, I must be a different guy, or it must be a different girl, or it must be a different this or a different that. Ultimately, when you see that you're living in the feeling of your thinking, as am I, as is everyone. So whether you feel loved or not in this moment, is really just a function of what's going on in your head. Are you thinking about the feeling of being loved in this moment? Are you thinking about that? And if you are, you're probably feeling it. And if you're not, you're probably not. And let me go a step beyond that, though, because that's love, that's a sort of the personal love, romantic love. There's a deeper feeling of love that most people report is what naturally arises when they're just present to the moment. And sometimes they don't describe it as love. Sometimes they might describe it as gratitude. Sometimes they might describe it as awe. Sometimes they might describe it as wonder. Sometimes it's described as peace. But it's just a beautiful, beautiful feeling of being held in the palm of the hand of the universe. And that's our natural state. That's what it feels like to be alive, uncontaminated by our personal thinking. And when we recognize that that's always available to us in relationship, out of relationship, then what brings us to relationship is quite a different thing. What brings us to relationship is that relationships can be really fun. That we can really find a lot of joy and reflection and intimacy and sex and all that other stuff when we're with somebody. And when you're in a relationship to enjoy each other's company, well, that's sustainable. And that doesn't take a lot of maintenance. And if you are aware that you don't need that other person to fulfill some weird idea that you picked up as a kid about what you're supposed to have, you're going to have a lot of patience with them. And you're probably going to have a lot of fun with them. And you're going to see them clearly and also know if there is a reason to get out. And if you're lucky enough to be in that place in you and be with somebody who's in that place in them, you're going to have something absolutely wonderful that you will treasure. And that's part of the possibility of a relationship when you have the freedom to show up as you are. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Portland and let's speak with Tyler. Tyler, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. I first just have to say I love the mustache analogy. That's hilarious.
Thank you.
And I was also going to say thank you. I've been listening to your show for the last 5 years or so, and you've been a huge influence and inspiration in my life, and I just wanted to throw that in there real quick.
Well, thank you very much. What's on today's menu?
So it might be a little off topic, but I've been struggling building my coaching practice for the last probably year and a half or so, and I was just kind of feeling a little stuck and seeing if I could get some clarity or maybe some ideas from you.
So when you say you're stuck, if I looked at your, I want to go back to the 80s and call it a Filofax, but your planner, your calendar.
Yeah.
How many conversations with potential clients would I see in there in the last, say, 4 weeks?
Oh, how many? Not that many. Probably less than 10, probably like five or six. Yeah, it's been at a lull.
So the reason that that's the first place that I go is that for most people who... and this is not just true for coaching. This is true for anyone who has a sort of a service-based business.
Sure.
Every client comes through conversation. In other words, once the price point goes up above, I don't know, $50, $100, whatever, you know, a one-off, a car wash,
right?
You know, a dry cleaning bill, the sale or agreement or relationship is always going to form through conversation. Now, it might be, I say conversation, it might be an email exchange, it might be,
right,
you know, letters, but it's going to be some sort of a one-to-one conversation.
Right.
And most people, when I look at their calendars, who come with that, are doing about as well as you'd expect somebody who has that many conversations with potential customers to do.
For sure.
Now, occasionally, I'll meet somebody who's having, you know, who's had 25 conversations in the last 2 weeks and has been doing that for 3 months and has no clients. And then at that point I want to look at, well, what are you saying?
Right.
You know, like what is going on in this conversation? Yeah. But generally speaking, it is as simple as, you know, when people get an experience of what it is that I have to offer, some of them will really want to have more of that. And those are the ones who become my clients.
Yeah. And I guess where I, like, cause I've offered probably quite a few sort of complimentary coaching sessions or consultations over the last year or so. I feel like I'm struggling generating the conversations, if that makes sense. Like I feel like I have kind of a small network and I'm just struggling to get those initial, like I've gone through the majority of my personal network and kind of called and asked for referrals and that kind of thing. And I'm not quite sure where to go next, I guess.
Okay. So here's, let me give you a sort of a weird gross analogy that just occurs to me. So if I walk around going up to people and I go, hey, do you want to try my this brown thing I have in my hand? They'll go, well, what is it? And you go, it's chocolate. And they'll go, well, but it looks like poo. And you go, no, it's chocolate. Well, really? Yeah, no, it's really good chocolate. Yeah, all right. I'll try some. Do you know what I mean? It's like if people don't know what coaching is,
sure,
or their idea of coaching is usually shaped from a bad experience of talking to somebody who wasn't very good at it. So to go around offering free coaching sessions, just in my experience, it is like offering brown stuff that people can't quite tell if it's poo or chocolate.
That's what I've been running into.
Yeah. So you know, you'll find your way. Like, you'll find your way of expressing it. But for you, what is the benefit of somebody hiring you? Like, if I was going to hire you, what would be different in my life after we were done working together than it is now?
I would definitely say an experience, a heightened experience of well-being and inner peace is a big one. And kind of like you talked about on your show a lot, and a more fundamental understanding of how the mind works, which for me leads to like a gentler experience of life. And then the results on the other side of it, like, you know, the actions become.
Okay. So do you ever meet, and I don't know, you live up in Oregon, so I don't know if anyone's stressed up there.
Yes.
But I'm guessing even in the second healthiest city in America, there's still a few stressed people floating around?
I think that's safe to say, yeah.
Yeah. So what would it be like? And I'm not saying this is how you do it, but I'm kind of saying this as an example of a different kind of conversation you could have.
Right.
You know, if you noticed somebody who was stressed and you said to them, hey, I hope you don't mind my pointing this out, but it seems to me you're pretty stressed. And they go, no, I can't say the one I would normally say. So, you know, no crap, Columbo.
Right.
You know, and you go, well, you know, as it happens, I've got a pretty good track record at helping people who are stressed to feel more peace of mind and then, you know, solve whatever problems they have from that place. Would you be interested in taking an hour with me or 2 hours or whatever you do, Tyler, and talking about it and you know, seeing if I can make a difference? Well, what's the catch? Well, no, there's no catch. If you like it and you want to do more of it, then you can hire me. And if you like it and you don't want to do more of it, you can tell people about me. And if you don't like it, then, you know, you're an hour older.
Right.
You know, can you see how that might be a different kind of conversation to offer to people?
Yeah, I can kind of see where I haven't maybe been looking for that. Like, oh, there's a need that I see. I, you know, generally when I work with people that's beneficial. Like, it's more been like, okay, who can I get a conversation with?
Right. And that's a whole different thing. Here's the fundamental shift. Here it is in a nutshell. Okay. As long as you're looking for something from someone else, you will struggle, you will procrastinate, you will put it off, and you will creep people out.
Yeah.
as long as you are looking for who can I serve and how can I serve them, you will not struggle. You will not have a lot of fear about approaching people, and you won't creep people out if you mean what you say.
Right.
And from that place, you can build a pretty cool coaching practice.
I got it.
Thanks, Tyler.
That's whole note. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it.
You bet. And look, that's true in any relationship. And by the way, we're going to come back with more of your calls in the second half. Lauren in South Africa, I just clocked you on the board. You will be first up if you can hang on, or you can phone back in at the top of the next segment. If you want to get on in the next part of the show, 866-254-1579, toll free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the U.S., dial your country code, then 760-918-4300. If you like the kind of things we talk about on this show, check me out online at supercoach.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Michael_Neal. Like me on Facebook at Michael Neal. And just keep listening to the show, because the more you listen, the better life gets. We're going to be right back after this short break.
transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about relationship freedom, the freedom to be yourself inside your most important relationships, among other things. We're actually talking about all sorts of things. And if you want to join me to have this conversation live in London or Switzerland in July, July 8th to the 10th, I'll be doing a 3-day advanced coaching workshop in London. I'll be doing a open to the public talk on the 9th of July at Alternatives in London. And I'll be doing a small group retreat, just 6 to 8 people in Switzerland on the 13th to the 15th of July. And you can learn about all of that by going to supercoach.com. But in the meantime, we're going to go to South Africa and we're going to talk to Lauren. Lauren, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Thank you. And I also want to say thank you for giving this platform to everybody to be coached by you. That's quite something. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
So basically, I'm 30 years old and I've never had a proper boyfriend. And it always seems to be that the ones I like want me as a friend, and the ones that like me, I'm not mad about.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you could get, and I don't think I have ego issues about getting into a relationship. I just think the main reasons I'd want to would be, as you said, fun, romance, and I think mutual understanding and support. Mm. So I don't know if that's...
So can I ask what you mean by a proper boyfriend?
Being together a year, anniversaries, romance, that sort of thing.
Okay, so a year is when I get real if I'm your boyfriend?
The longest I had a proper relationship would be like 3 months.
3 months or 2 months?
Three
months. Okay. And does a proper relationship mean sex? I'm just trying to get a picture for myself.
Not to me.
Oh, okay. So a proper relationship, so that doesn't, that means that we are, I'm just trying to separate out a proper relationship from a, I don't know, an improper
Good
relationship.
Question.
You know, I'm trying to make sense of that. Tell me about that.
Because when you ask that, no, I'm not sure.
Well, see, it's interesting because that's the first thing I noticed when you said it is you've clearly got some idea of what counts, but if you're not really clear on what that is, there's no way in heck that a guy's going to be clear on it.
Yeah. I just suppose a boyfriend is someone you go out with regularly and you see and date and that sort of thing.
Okay. And so... So you have had relationships like that, but just none of them have lasted very long.
Yeah.
Yeah, or I said that.
And no, it's never been with someone I'm crazy about. It's been with someone I feel okay with, but I'm not mad about them.
Right. Well, so here's this is great. I love the way that you're talking about this, and I hope you don't mind my being frank, but.
No, you must be.
I was going to say, you called my show, so it's your fault. The only place that I'm aware of in life where crazy and mad are positives, we use them as if they're positives, is in relationship.
Yeah.
And that's kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Because it's like crazy and mad aren't great things. Now, it's... My experience of relationships, and I, you know, personally, I mean, I've been in a, what I'll call a proper relationship with one woman for 24 and a half years. So in some ways I do know what I'm talking about. And in other ways, I don't know that much because I've only been in a relationship with one woman for 24 years. So, you know, there's all sorts of things I probably don't know, but the thing that I'm aware of is that over time, people grow together. Relationships that work over time, people always describe it as we're more compatible now than we were when we met. We're more in love now than we were when we met. We feel so much more connected now at such a deeper level than we did when we met. And so there's something about the idea that you're going to find this, you know, deep loving connection with somebody that's going to be fully present from day one. That doesn't really fit with my experience of life. And I don't just mean my personal experience, but my experience of working with people over time.
Yeah, I agree with that. In fact, I actually think I don't want that initially because I don't want to be too attached to someone I know isn't right for me and go through heartbreak and everything for someone. And I know initially they're not right for me.
So how do you know when if you want to be, if you wanted to, let me simplify this out. Okay, because we're talking about relationships as if they exist.
Yeah.
Okay, a relationship is something that we start to call a series of dates over a period of time.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So let's forget about relationships for a minute, and let's just simplify it down. How do you decide if you would like to go on a date with someone?
I think they're fun and friendly and easygoing. That's, you know, anything pretty decent.
Okay, great. So you meet somebody, they're fun and friendly and seem pretty decent, and you decide to go on a date with them. How do you decide
can
whether...
Can I change my question slightly?
Yeah, please. Please, because then I can answer a different one.
It's the guys I like, they don't like me and they want me as friends, and I feel the rejection. Maybe that's more what I'm upset about. Because when you're describing a relationship, I don't think I'm okay with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
After that description, I think,
So I what's your sample size, Lauren? I mean, are we talking, you know, the 500 guys that I have liked in my life, all 500 of them have said they don't want to go out with me? About seven. Okay, did you hear my conversation with our friend in Oregon earlier?
About, I came a little bit late. I'm not, which conversation?
About coaching, about building his coaching practice.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's a similar thing in relationships.
Yeah.
Okay? That seven is really way too small a sample size to draw a conclusion from. You know, so there's 6 billion people on Earth. Let's say 3 billion men. Let's narrow it down to, let's get rid of 2/3 of them as, too old, too young, or too icky. Okay, so we're down to 1 billion to choose from. I just think you might want to go for a larger sample size than seven before you start drawing any conclusions about a pattern in your life.
Okay, maybe you're right.
And the thing is, even if I'm wrong, and I don't think I am, obviously, or I wouldn't be saying it, there's nothing particularly useful that's going to come from trying to solve that problem. You know, if you really are the one cursed woman on earth, and it would be an honor to have you call my show. I want you to know that. But if you really are the one cursed person on earth, there's nothing we can do that's going to help anyways. So I'm going to assume that you're not.
Okay.
I'm going to assume that you're like the rest of us and that, you know what, there's a learning curve in life.
Right.
And it's really difficult to take that learning curve once a year. You know what I mean? It's like a flip book where if you we have the little drawing in the corner. If you turn it one page a year, you're never going to really see it dance. While on the one hand, I'm not normally an advice giver, if I was going to give advice in this instance, and it sounds like I am, you know, go meet some more guys.
Where though? How do you, anyway?
Well, look, that level is probably not, I'm probably the last person you should talk to about.
Okay.
I suspect, Lauren, that somewhere in South Africa, there are guys who would like to meet girls.
Okay, thanks.
Absolutely. When you've done it, feel free to phone back. Like when that number has gone from 7 to 15, you know, call back and let's see if we're still having the same conversation, because I can almost guarantee you we won't be.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Bye. You know, it's so easy. You know, I've written about this before as the hidden reason, the secret reason why you're not reaching your goals. And I may do a radio show on that, actually. It's a sexy title. But I'm going to give it away now as well. Because the secret reason why people don't reach their goals is often because they just are really crap at predicting how long something should take. So it's not necessarily that they've got the wrong strategy. It's not necessarily that they're not good enough. It's not that the universe is out to get them or they're stuck in some pattern from childhood. Usually it's just that for some reason they thought it was supposed to work the first time. And, you know, it might take 100 times. It might take 50 times. It might take 12 times. Or it worked once and then it won't work again for 15 times. Or you think it's going to take 3 months and it takes a year. But if you allow for that fact, if you allow for the fact that the two things that human beings seem to be worst at is predicting what's going to make them happy and predicting how long something's going to take, then it's not such a big deal. And you don't have to make up a reason why things aren't working out, when the reason may well be, and often is, it just takes longer than you want it to take. And again, if you know that, if you know that's just a tendency most of us have, you can really relax into it. Let's go to Canada, to Toronto, and speak with Dave. Dave, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am very well, thank you.
Well, I have a question, and that's regarding my career move within the company.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working right now, and I just wanted to apply for an internal position, which is open. But I'm not so sure whether I can get the position or not, and I'm a little bit doubtful.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just kind of wanted to get your advice as to what I should do, because I would be in the process of having a kind of an interview with the hiring manager,
mm-hmm.
and I just wanted to know. It's not going to be an interview, but it's going to be a first meeting on that, because I have to discuss whether I'm an appropriate fit or not. So just before doing that, I just wanted to get a sense as to how would that go.
Well, how do you, from your point of view, forgetting anything else about it, are you an appropriate fit?
I believe about 70%.
70%.
Yeah.
Okay. So would it make sense to you that if they could find somebody who was 80% or 90% or even 100% fit, that they probably would hire them over you?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. And would it also make sense to you, though, that if they mostly had people who were 60%, 50% or 40%, that they would hire you over them?
Yeah, this is also a possibility, because things happen like that. Many things
have you ever watched, sorry, this sounds like a non sequitur, but it really does connect, I promise. Have you ever seen the Dudley Moore-Peter Cook sketch about the one-legged Tarzan?
No.
It's worth going on YouTube and typing in one-legged Tarzan. And it's this old sketch from the 1960s, and Dudley Moore comes into audition for a new Tarzan movie. And he's on one leg. He's hopping around on one leg.
Okay, yeah.
And he auditions, and the auditioner says to him, well, you know, that was a very good audition. And, you know, traditionally, the role of Tarzan is cast as a two-legged person. But should we have no two-legged actors come in to audition, you are absolutely our first choice. And Dudley Moore is very excited about that. And the reason that to me is relevant to the situation is if you recognize that this isn't something about you trying to convince them of something that isn't true.
Yeah.
It's just a chance to really show them the 70% that's there. And maybe learn to see if there's something in that other 30% that you could become very good at.
Yeah, this is what I have in mind.
I can't imagine any way to prepare for the meeting more beautifully than that. In other words, there's nothing that you have to prepare to go in and learn and inquire and show.
Yeah.
I mean, am I missing something, or does that sound true to you?
No, it's perfect, because I just wanted to kind of reevaluate the situation.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have a second opinion, and that's true. So I just wanted to size up my interests as well into the new position. So, but I don't know if anything would come to fruition.
But that's just true, Dave, right? Like we don't. And if we think we know, we're mistaken.
Yeah.
Right? People try and talk themselves in and out of things as if they know what's going to happen ahead of time. And with the exception of a few people who work with me on Hay House Radio, we just don't know the future.
Exactly.
So I, you know, I would say, you know, have fun, go in, learn what you can.
Yeah.
Share what you know, and let us know how it goes.
Well, So is there any book or anything that you have that you can suggest or recommend?
Sure. Look, if you stay on the line, we'll send you out a copy of Supercoach.
Oh, that would be perfect.
Okay, stay on the line. They'll take down your details.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Dave. Yeah, you know what? Sometimes it is that easy, right? We think that, and this actually kind of goes back to our theme. We think that we have to impress somebody, whether it's a job interview or a date. You know, we think that our job is to make them like us, make them want us. Well, that's a weird approach. Because again, if you win, you lose. If you fake your way into a job, you're then stuck in a job that doesn't fit you. If you fake your way into a relationship, then you're stuck with somebody who doesn't even know you. It seems to me, and maybe I'm naive, and that would be okay, because my naivete kind of leads to a very happy, simple life, is, you know, why wouldn't I show up as me and find out whether or not this is a good fit for me that way? You know, I was talking to somebody about selling, and they were asking about, well, now should I adapt my materials to this marketplace or to that marketplace, or, you know, and should I talk about it? And you absolutely can do that. I'm not telling you don't do that. I'm not telling you. But if you really want to work with people who really want to work with you, if you really want to date people who really want to date you, your best bet is to put yourself out there as you are and find out who wants to date you. Find out who wants to hire you. And if you're recognizing, to the extent that you're kind of recognizing, hey, I don't need to be in fear about this. I don't need this for my survival. Even with money, right? Even if I need money, I don't need your money. Then that lets me just be real. Even if I feel like I need love, I don't need your love. That lets me be who I am. And when I show up from that place, warts and all, then I'm free. Let's go to Oregon. Let's see if we can get one more in. And then I promised you a story, and I might even keep my promise. If not, I'm going to post it on the Facebook page. But let's go to Oregon and talk to Julia. Julia, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Well, I have this relationship with driving that's just not giving in to me. I'm 29, and I started going into it 6 years ago. It didn't go well, and then I stopped trying. Then trying 2 years ago, and I have been driving with the permit, and I don't know what's wrong with me. I see all these old people driving and teenagers driving, and I tell myself, well, surely you can do the same thing. But I just, every time I get in the car, I feel like I get so nervous I forget to pay attention or something. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Well, shall we list possibilities?
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
Okay, so in a past life, you were run over by a horse and buggy. and the trauma is now connecting you to your car. That would be one. Two is you have a repressed childhood memory of falling out of a window and bouncing off a moving automobile, and somehow you just made the association that driving is dangerous. Or I'm gonna lean towards C, which is you've got some thinking about driving, and because we feel our thinking, when you think about driving, you feel scared.
That would be the most probable, but can't figure out what it is that I'm thinking.
Well, here's the good, yeah, but sure. Now, I understand that, but here's the good news.
Okay.
Is we have so many thoughts that go through our head that if we had to figure out which ones were which, it would be a full-time job. So what we have, and this is just the human operating system, right? This is as true for me as it is for you, as it is for anyone listening. Okay, is we have a thought-feeling system, which is, we feel our thinking. So the way we know we've got some not useful thinking is because we feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we feel uncomfortable, we feel insecure, we feel scared, we feel angry, we feel out of sorts, we feel muddled.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I know that that's just how the system works, like every time I drop my pen, I should have dropped it on somebody's radio. I'm going to drop it. Every time I drop my pen, there, could you hear that one?
Yep.
Great. There you go. Every time I drop my pen, I know it's going to fall, right? Because I understand that's how the system works.
Okay.
So every time I have a thought, I'm going to have a feeling. And then I can figure out from that, if I'm having these really uncomfortable, unpleasant feelings, I must have some uncomfortable, unpleasant thinking going on. Now, here's another truth of the system. When we let it, new thinking comes along all the time, right? Like if you just let your mind go free, you don't think the same thing. Like, if you just do stream of consciousness, right? Like, if I do stream of consciousness right now, it's like I can think about, you know, Father's Day, and I can think back to some things that happened on Father's Day, and then I can think about a sheep who's eating some daisies, and then Daisy is my niece, and so my niece is playing on a swing, and then Frankenstein is there, right? It's like thought flows.
Yep.
But the reason that in certain areas we don't let thought flow, we somehow get attached to, we get deceived by thinking the same thoughts over and over and over again, as if somehow doing that's going to lead us to some conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you know that that's all that could be going on, is that you've got some not very useful thinking around driving, then what that also lets you do is just open back up to some new thinking about driving.
Okay. Well, here's my question. So sometimes when I go practicing, I do perfectly fine, and I'm confident, and I notice all the signs, and I do everything just right.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, I'm just all out of sorts. I'm just, my husband can't take it. He just has to ask me, please, let's go home.
Yeah.
We can't do this. So.
Well, that's why, you might want to pay a driving instructor who has to put up with you. But, you know.
Well, we've tried that, too.
But that's actually, Julia, that's a great example of what I'm talking about. The fact that sometimes you can get in and just do it, that's like an affirmation for you. Oh, it really must just be some thinking. Because sometimes I'm absolutely fine. So here's this. I'm going to have to do this in a very tight time capsule.
Okay.
But if you imagine a snow globe, right? If so, you being the way you like to be in the car is like the snow globe being clear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everything that you do to try and make the snow globe clear just shakes the snow around more. So anything you try to do to fix your thinking around driving is just going to give you more thinking. And if you just kind of sit with it, but not with a, oh my God, I hope it doesn't happen again. Oh my God. Oh, wouldn't it be awful if it happened again? What's wrong with me? Why can't I do it? That's a lot of snow. I'm talking about just kind of going, boy, I wonder what new thought's going to come. Mm-hmm. I will promise you that from that space, new thought will come, because that's just how the system works.
Well, that's easy.
Yeah. And that ease will really, really serve you going forward. And please, you know, if you want, you can post on Facebook if you don't want to phone back in on and let us know.
Yeah, I have a driving test on Monday, so I'm going to.
Fantastic. And let us know. Let us know. It would be great. Thank you, Julia.
Thank you so much. I love you, Michael.
Oh, thank you. Listen, thank you, everyone. We're going to be back with another live show next week. If I didn't share the story, I promise. So if you go to my Facebook page, Michael Neal, I will share the story from Real Love by Greg Bear. Until next week, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.